morning. Resume the hearing. It's day 16 on the 5th of August. Mr. Todd and Mr. Williams, you're here for Courts Commercial Group. And over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just asked staff to bring up the site on the large plan behind you, if you're not familiar with the same. And that shows the urban growth boundary around the Harware Township and also the extent of the subzone indicated by, I think it's purple, purple line partly through the site.
I should tell you that we have been to the site. We went up the driveway beside the pub. We stood and observed the flat area behind the pub, orientated ourselves as to where the property boundaries were, observed the house at the back. So I think we know what's there.
Excellent. Thank you. And I've prepared and filed some written submissions. Have you...
We have indeed. We've
Do you want me to read them? Through
I do not. You can highlight the key points. We've all read them. I've certainly read them. I have
one
or two points to ask you about, but only one or two.
Right. Well, the main issues, I guess, can be summarised that again, this is a submission, and some of the issues which have been highlighted in the planning officer's report. Where they say that we are effectively seeking site-specific rules. That's a direct outcome, again, unfortunately, of the manner in which the council has undertaken its review in stages. The position is a consequence of that. The second issue in relation to the submission points that we've made and will be highlighted in Mr. Williams' evidence, it has been highlighted as evidence and in a summary, is that what we're trying to do here is to make the rules work for the purposes of the subzone in particular. This was an issue that was highlighted recently in an application or hearing of an application in Queenstown where there was a visitor accommodation subzone at Fern Hill in a medium density, the majority of the site, has been proposed to be rezoned. And it became very, very clear at the hearing of that application that the rules which were provided for in the medium density zone really restricted the ability for the site to be developed in accordance with its purpose pursuant to the subzone. What we're seeking here is subzone seeks to enable visitor accommodation facilities as rules which will actually enable that to happen because we're concerned that the way things stand, that's not the case. So those are the main issues, and then it's a matter of detail in terms of the specific submission points that have been made. And so I'm happy to answer any questions.
Only one question from me, Mr. Todd. And that relates to the point you've just made of reading paragraphs 17 and 18 of your written submissions. Do I understand you correctly to say that paragraph 17, that if an activity is contemplated, it should be permitted in the plan?
Well, not necessarily permitted, but it's certainly we would suggest controlled. And if an activity is contemplated, you should effectively have rules which give effect to the policies and objectives, and we don't think that's the case in this situation.
And
I think we're getting more and more conscious of the fact that applications for resource consents are an extremely time-consuming and costly exercise, and appears these days you have to have an army of consultants turning up to justify an application for something which the plan signals should be occurring, but the rules really work against that.
In point 18, I was having been to the site, I was contemplating a chopper putting put down effectively in the middle of an urban area with a house within a stone's throw, and thinking, is that real?
Well, we think it is, given that if you look at the area behind you, and as Mr. Williams has pointed out, there is the ability to control flight movements by way of flight paths that wouldn't necessarily interfere or cause overflying of residential property.
Yeah, I can understand you could bring it in over the dam.
Yes.
And so you're not actually over the top. But that house at the back is right there. Yeah. Could you really meet the noise limit?
Well, that
at
would
that
be a
distance?
Matter. Well, that would be a matter for assessment and an application if one could make one. What the current situation is, we can't even make an application to enable you to assess that. And again, in a visitor accommodation subzone, and given the nature of, for example, in the local context, the hotel over on the other side of the lake, which has residential properties surrounding it, there's flight movements in and out of, helicopter flight movements in and out of there all the time.
Where's that?
The
Edgewater
Hotel Complex. Very similar scenario to this.
Thank you, Mr. Todd. Any other questions?
No, I think I'll ask Mr.
Williams.
Lucky Mr. Williams.
Mr. Williams,
your moment in the sun.
A brief summary of his.
Thank you.
Starting at paragraph one, having reviewed the rebuttal evidence of Ms. Melbourne's, I would like to note the following points. It does not appear any Section 32 analysis has been undertaken to assess the downzoning of the site resulting from the change from township zone, visitor accommodation subzone, to lower density residential, suburban residential, visitor accommodation subzone, versus the alternative of the settlement zoning and associated visitor accommodation subzoning. I would reiterate that a majority of the rule changes sought are those that are being promoted by council in association with the settlement zone visitor accommodation subzoning. In terms of licensed premises, in my experience, the interpretation as suggested by Ms. Belvoise has not been applied. If this logic was to be adopted, I would question then why does the settlement zone seek to specifically have a rule providing for the sale of liquor associated with visitor accommodation activities? It would not be necessary if the definition already provides for that activity. And I just reflected on that last night, because I guess the point is we're both agreeing that there should be a clear consenting pathway for licensed premises. But I again note the high density zone for the rule 9.4.6, which is the rule controlling visitor accommodation in the high density zone. That specifically notes that it includes licensed premises within the visitor accommodation development. So it makes it very clear that in consenting the visitor accommodation, it also includes licensed premises.
Is that, it's in the high density zone?
Yes, so that's rule 9.4.6. So again, as I've identified in my evidence, my preference is to make it very clear that it intends to include visitor accommodation, and the inconsistencies in the plan and the way I see council applying that runs a big risk to you know, the owner of the site and their ability to continue to operate and then, you know, provide for a licensed premise into the future.
Taking Mr. Todd's point, would such clarity necessarily have to be on a site-specific basis to be within scope?
No, I don't believe so. My in my evidence, I've proposed a rule to provide for licensed premises to make it very clear that they have a consenting pathway as a restricted discretionary activity.
So the high-density one just has these words, including licensed premises within a visitor accommodation development.
Yes.
And are you saying that the definition of visitor accommodation does include licensed premises, but it's not clear enough? Or are you saying it should include it?
I think it's unclear. I think the point is that we've Ms. Bowes and I are in agreement that it should be clearly provided for. It's just I think that currently the mechanism isn't strong enough to give that certainty.
Is that because the definition isn't clear?
That's right. Yeah, it begs the question, particularly given the framework of the plan and other zones, like I pointed out, the recently proposed settlement zone, which we're considering at the moment, specifically acknowledges and provides for licensed premises. The high-density zone does the same, and yet here we're not going to do that. We're going to be silent and leave it to the definition. To me, that is fraught for problems down the track when we go to lodge consents. And in fact, is in my experience, is how consents have been processed, is they haven't relied on the definition to provide.
It's the reality that it invites someone to argue that the absence of a similar provision is material.
Yes.
And that if that had been intended, it would have said so because it was specified in these other zones.
Yep.
Particularly because these other zones make it very clear that visitor accommodation, including licensed premises, you know, it entirely begs the question that was intentional not to include it in the other zones. So paragraph 4. I remain of the opinion that the change to a prohibited status for informal airports, which was previously non-complying, has had no equivalent Section 32 analysis to support such a stringent status. I would again note no such status would apply if the site was zoned settlement. And I guess that's the point in the discussion just had a minute ago, that it's just providing a consenting pathway. As it's proposed, there is no room to consider the potential effect on the neighbour. It's just prohibited. And then finally, at paragraph 5, in terms of building height, building coverage, landscape permeability, surface coverage, building separation within sites and building length, the operative district plan, and in most instances, the settlement zone provisions provide a more effective and efficient recognition of the site attributes than the default regime that results from the zone in the Hawea Township low density and the subsequent visitor accommodation subzoning that comes with the site.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Dawson, would you like to go first?
Bobines have agreed on the extension of the visitor accommodation subzone. We still have a submission from the Hawea Community Association opposing it, as I read it last night. And what they talk about in their submission is the bringing of it up onto what they call the high plateau of land, and I think that upper part of the site, which is which is more at the level of the residential properties behind. As I recall it from our site visit. What do you say to that about the implications of bringing visitor accommodation a subzone, and also your range of additional rules up onto that higher piece of land, as opposed to sort of down where the pub is and then that sort of bowl behind it.
I guess the first point is we're within the urban growth boundary, so it's inherent in that we need to be viewing this within an urban context. So we expect built form throughout this area. So that's the frame of reference. We're not talking about rural and landscape context.
No, no, but we're talking
context.
About low-density residential potentially, or proposed, being up, subzoned, if you can call it that.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And so that would be viewed within an urban context. So I don't think that built form would be out of scale with what's anticipated in that general environment.
How do you say that when it's becoming beyond the scale of development that is expected through the low density residential zone on such an elevated site too?
Well, in my opinion, it wouldn't appear to stick out or be of such elevation that it, you know, if that was built out, you'd all of a sudden be like, oh my God, what's that there? Because it's viewed within the context of the township, and there is development or would be development along that same elevation, and so I don't perceive that you would see that any differently in that respect.
Can I see that one step there?
Sure.
If anyone was to accept that argument coming from how we are looking, driving through the urban development, then absolutely you expect that. But if you're coming from the viewed from the dam,
yes,
you're actually leaving a very rural environment. It's very high. It's essentially the first part of the built form you'll see, and it's already up on a high bank, to take the commissioner's point. And then that built form, wouldn't you consider that would be almost castle-like?
Well, in an urban context, that's not necessarily an adverse effect. We expect building form and height within urban areas. And the general framework of the plan is to encourage intensification of urban areas. So in and of itself, to see as you enter, you're going to know you're entering an urban environment. So to the extent that extra height is all of a sudden a shock to you, I just don't believe that would be the case.
Thank you.
Also site coverage.
In that regard, is it material that you're also seeking an enlargement of the height limit?
That's right.
Yep. Yes, they sort of a newer bundle of provisions that comes with.
Yep. Well, that's what I take those questions to be inferring, is the additional height as opposed to.
Well, it's sort of a both, I suppose. It's the additional height, mm-hmm. additional density, building coverage.
Okay. Sorry, well, I need to explain that.
75% building coverage.
Yes, but if I think the question there was, well, if those weren't applied, and there's a difference. So urban environment is anticipated in that area, whether or not the VA subzone is extended. Yes, there needs to be consideration if the additional provisions we're proposing are implied in terms of the matters you've questioned around the terrace, etc. But not as simply extending the subzoning with the current provisions, because that's our whole point, is that even if you extend the subzoning, the current framework effectively forces a low density outcome, 7 metre height limit, 40% site coverage.
I mean, that's sort of what it's intended to do, isn't it? I mean, that's my quick next question is going to be.
So if those provisions, so in that context, there is no difference in terms of the built form effects when viewed as you come into town.
No, I understand but it's the combination of the range of additional provisions combined with visitor accommodation on that elevated site at the entrance to the town, really, as you see as you approach the town.
And that's where my answers to the initial questions are responding to that issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your initial questions were in that context?
Yes. That's right.
The policies in the low audience of his own, 7.28 in its policies, are the specific policies, objective policies that relate to visitor accommodation within that zone.
Yes.
So they are looking at enabling visitor accommodation at a scale intensity that maintain the residential character and amenities of the zone.
Yes.
So as I, and then they have some policies maintaining residential character, compatible with the surrounding residential context, maintaining residential character and amenity values, low intensity. So as I read that, that there is provision for visitor accommodation in these subzones, but it relates to the scale, density, intensity of that zone. Yeah. So why do you say that it's an incompatibility, having a visitor subzone with those built form requirements is incompatible with allowing the activity?
So as of it, I think paragraphs 18 and 19 of my evidence explain my opinion in respect of how those policies work together. So in particular, in my view, it sets a frame for the zone, but then the policies, particularly policy 7.2.8.5, is directive in seeking to manage the effects of RVA and homestays by managing the scale, intensity and frequency of use. And it's quite specific in referencing that in respect of those two rather than visitor accommodation generally. And by inference, that follows through, that's setting up the more intensive use associated with the visitor accommodation subzone. And so as I've explained in my evidence, in my opinion, the character of the zone can be maintained because the method we've used here, which is the subzoning tool, is providing a more considered and directed approach to particular areas within the broader zone versus the RVA and the homestays, which are more dispersed. And so there's a risk that, you know, if they're not more managed, they can, you know, pop up everywhere and really start to influence the character of the zone more generally. Whereas when we're talking about visitor accommodation subzones, we've adopted a method to direct in particular locations visitor accommodation. And that's how I see them working together to support that objective.
So how have you assessed the impacts of the increased height, the 75% density, on residential amenity? I mean,
yep.
Although you say that they're not, that, you know, that they've been identified and they're mapped, when you look at where they are throughout the zones,
mm-hmm.
whether it's low density, medium density, like
mm-hmm.
Mr. Todd was talking about, they are scattered throughout the zones,
yes.
often around existing development or
yes.
A site that someone might be anticipating development on. So it's not like they're hard up around commercial zones or anything. I mean, this one happens to be relatively close to a commercial zone, but they are scattered. So how do the rules that you're seeking ensure that residential amenity for immediate neighbours on this range of sites are adverse effects are avoided, can make the residential character and amenity values that are maintained?
So I guess there's a few elements to that in terms of the different provisions. So some were already in play in the ODP for the township zone, visitor accommodation subzone, and are to continue to apply within the other settlement zones. So in particular, I'm talking about site coverage. So the previously the site had a 75% site coverage allowance under the ODP.
In the township zone?
Yes. And the PDP settlement zone provides an 80% site coverage allowance.
So it's never been zoned that, has it?
Yeah, so it was zoned under the ODP township zone.
Has never had a settlement zone?
No, but the settlement zone is a replacement township zone.
It's a replacement
Not everywhere. Not here, it isn't.
No, no. But it's basically.
I can't understand why you keep bringing the settlement zone into it. You're just saying, would you prefer the settlement zone?
Well, for this site, yes, it would have been more advantageous because it would have enabled exactly the provisions it previously had.
But for the rest of the town, it wouldn't have necessarily been advantageous because it would have stuck with the 600 square metre, 800 square metre lot.
But I guess that's our whole, that's a big thrust of our whole evidence, is that effect or that downzoning effectively, that is a consequence of this process, hasn't been assessed. There's been no assessment of this outcome.
Of townships to low density for the subzone.
That's very important to this, the point we're trying to make. We're not trying to suggest something that didn't necessarily in some aspects already exist or was promoted originally or was promoted elsewhere by virtue of the settlement zone.
So the 75% site coverage applies to every lot in the township zone?
No, in the visitor accommodation subzone.
So was it a visitor accommodation subzone up on that higher terrace previously?
Up to the point as it was notified, yes.
But not the higher terrace?
Not the extra piece, no.
Okay, so you are asking for more than the township zone had in terms of the extent of the visitor accommodation subzone?
Yes.
Which is, happens to be the highest place and closest to the residential neighbours.
And so that's site coverage, and so I guess the other one is height. And so fundamentally, as far as the provisions I'm promoting, it's not saying you get that height as a right. It's providing a consenting process to...
So if you could just take me through those, that's going to be my next question. In terms of... I think I understand about the activity and the licensed premises, but for the building height...
Yes.
You're looking for a...
A restricted discretionary...
Restricted discretionary,
yes.
Between the...
Seven.
The low density, normal permitted height and...
The 12.
The 12.
And
was it 12, and how was the 12 covered in the township zone?
It wasn't.
So it never went up to 12 in the township zone,
not.
Even in the visitor accommodation zone?
That's right.
So you are asking for more than what it had before. You're not entirely relying on...
As far as height goes, yes. Okay. However, I do note that the new township zone does provide for additional height in commercial precincts.
Yeah, but this isn't a commercial precinct.
No, but...
It never was a commercial precinct.
But to suggest...
But the settlement both... The visitor accommodation and the commercial precinct.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to demonstrate there is that this framework of a stepped height arrangement isn't out of step with the framework plan.
No,
and
no, so I think there are other places that have that.
That's right.
Other types of rules. Okay, and building coverage, you're wanting 75%.
Which was the ODP allowance.
So that's what it used to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
And not applying the landscape rule.
That's right.
And
that
not
never
applying the building separation rule.
Yeah.
Within the zone.
Yes.
So when you say, and similarly the building length rule.
So other than height, those other matters
were in the township zone, in a visitor accommodation subzone in the township zone. Okay. And are you saying that by confining these provisions to a subzone, a mat subzone, the rest of the zone is protected?
Yes.
Or maintained, residential character and amenity of the rest of the zone is maintained.
Yep.
That's your position.
Yes.
It's by the mapping and the discreteness of those sites.
But not only by that, but then the rule framework itself, particularly as respect
height,
of height, for example, doesn't automatically give you that height. It has a...
What's the only one that doesn't? The others all do give you automatically
75%. Which is controlled.
Yep. Which was effectively my argument, was that was already there previously.
For some of your site?
Yes. Yeah. Most of the site, yes.
Can I be clear that you are now only seeking this for the subzone, for this subzone, or are you still trying to seek it for all such subzones in the low-density residential zone?
Well, in my opinion, the same general thrust of the my view applies, in that there is a complete disconnect between these bulk and location controls and the intent and policy framework for visitor accommodation within subzones.
Would you say that visitor accommodation couldn't be developed within those bulk and location requirements?
It places a significant constraint on delivering what I believe is what the policies seek to encourage, which is a more intensive form of visitor accommodation within specifically identified locations.
It doesn't say that though, does it? Where does it say, because actually where does it say that in the low density residential zone, the visitor accommodation in the subzones is intended to be more intense than the rest of the low density zone? It says the uses can be developed more easily. The activity is pointed to those subzones more easily. You don't have to be residential visitor accommodation or homestays in those zones. But I don't read in the low density zone that there's an intention to make it more intensive. Talks about them being appropriate for the low density environment and maintaining residential amenity values.
Yes.
Character.
But I guess that's my point, is the subzoning is trying to identify a tool to recognise a pathway to manage that balance, because we're not proposing provisions that allow this to occur throughout the zone. We've got identified areas largely around existing sort of forms of development that don't reflect a low-density character. I mean, it's clear when you go to the hotel site, it's not low-density in character.
Is it higher than 7 metres?
I wouldn't be sure.
No.
But it's not just height. It's the character, the form, it's the use, there's no residential character attributes. And that's what these subzonings are seeking to try and ensure we have a clearer way through that process that doesn't run up against this low-density character type arrangement.
Where are you reading that in the policies, I suppose that's what I'm saying. Where are you reading from the policies, which you haven't sought to change, that the scale and density of visitor accommodation in the low-density zone, even in the subzones, is intended to be at a higher scale than would normally be anticipated in the residential zone?
Well, I think it's in the purpose of the subzoning approach in itself, but it's also how I've said in my paragraph 18 in respect of policy 7.2.8.5, because that makes it very clear.
Well, that's not about this, it's about the opposite, isn't it?
But that's what I'm saying, is that by inference, although it may not be necessarily strong.
But the first policy, 7.2.8.1, is about this.
Is to provide for visitor accommodation.
That are appropriate for the low-density residential environment, ensuring that adverse effects on amenity values are avoided, remedied, and mitigated. And the objective talks about visitor accommodation at a scale, intensity, and frequency that maintains residential character and amenity value.
Of the zone. So I think that's the...
Is that your point?
Yes, and that's what my evidence establishes as well, is that, yes, the overall character of the zone is low density, but it's seeking to identify particular areas by the subzoning that can provide for a greater scale of activity whilst the overall zone character is maintained. And I think that's supported by policy 7.2.8.4, where it is specific in terms of those other uses, because they're the ones, because they don't have a subzoning identifying where they go, where they have much greater risk if they are of a greater scale or intensity of undermining the character of the zone. That is not the case within the subzones.
Okay. And like the setbacks from the site boundaries or the subzone boundaries, are you not seeking to change those?
No, they are an important part of
a
base.
They're additional built,
yes.
built, keeping the additional built form.
That's right.
Height of the,
yep.
of the consented
yep.
and coverage away
yes.
from the edges of the subzone.
That's right. Yes.
Okay, thank you. But now, just so the scope of your submission, your client's submission, what did it ask for in terms of this site versus every other subzone site in the low density zone, or even the medium density, since the pod's taken us there? What did it ask for?
So I spoke again with Mr. Todd about this as far as the scope, and it is our opinion that the submission provides scope for change.
Do you want me to look it up myself, or are you going to read
No,
it?
No, I can refer to it.
Mm.
If you look at the first page of the submission.
Right, well, I can't, but it will take me
well,
a while.
It says the specific provisions of the plan that my submission relates to are the definition of visitor accommodation, the zoning of the submitter's property at Capel Avenue, the definition of accommodation, the provisions of the low-density residential subzone as they relate to the property,
okay.
the provisions of the transport chapter as they relate to the property, and the Wahi Te Puna chapter.
Okay, well that's cool. Thank you very much for reading that out. Okay, that's enough for me.
Could I just raise one issue that was asked in a question by Commissioner Dawson, where she indicated that we were bringing the subzone closer to the residential neighbours. If you look at the plan that was attached to Mr. Williams' evidence, the subzone is already adjacent to the at least the existing residential properties.
Yes.
And the extension is of an area further away from those.
So the property immediately to the south.
Yes, in terms of the south, it brings it closer to those.
That's what I was thinking about. But you're quite right. It's already adjoining a number
yes.
of residential properties.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask why was it originally set like that, to exclude that back property? Was there a reason behind it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
In fact, when you look at that...
Certainly no reference to it in the Section 32 analysis as to why it's done like that.
Part of that higher area, part of the area that's already, of the higher area, is already in that
subzone.
That's correct.
I guess
yes,
that's correct.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that's an important point, is the subzoning, is my understanding. There's no relationship
no,
to the terrace.
It's
already
not
above
like
the terrace.
Terrace.
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for explaining.
Mr. Williams, ask you first. pulling tags out as Commissioner Dawson asks questions. Paragraph 11. You're referring to existing consent, 15-year time frame lapsing on June 2021. Do you mean lapsing or do you mean expiring?
Sorry, that's 2020.
Paragraph 11A, third line.
Yes, sorry, that's right, it expires on that day. Yes.
Thank you. Just some clarifications for me, if you can. This is page 13, the table of the height. And I suspect this is planned drafting convention, and I must admit I find it confusing. But that's probably just I haven't worked with this plan enough. When you go to your specific rule, building height, visitor accommodation, subzone and hardware, you've got the rule, building height of 7 metres. And I looked at that and I thought, what if you want to go above that? And is that, is the implication it's the non-complying? So is it really this between 7 and 12 is RD? Is that how that's supposed to work?
Yes, it is.
And is that a plan drafting? That's plan drafting across the whole plan, isn't it? Is it? Because it
yes.
automatically said, my first implication was, well, what is it if it's above 7? So I go to non-compliant. Okay, that's, so it's 7 to 12. Then I go to your suggested non-compliant rule, 12 metres and 3 storeys. And again, this is just convenient.
Yeah.
So if it's 12 metres and 4 storeys,
then non-compliant.
Is that how that works? It's just all very unclear to me.
So the way I understand the structure is that it's basically due to the at the very top of the column, it says it's non-compliant status. So it means, yeah, as you've said, that the non-compliant status, if you breach the 7 metres, is in this case proposed to be RD, and similarly breaching the 12 or 3 storeys non-compliant. So
would it be clearer if it said at 7532 7 to 12 metres and up to 3 storeys.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking. Yep. That's, I know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And just the final question I have, just when I go to the matters of restriction, there's a combination there of sort of questions. How design provides for modulator, then C is like a rule, but avoidance. And then, again, is that just plan drafting, or you're not particularly wedded to those? So the discretions are, is two modulated roof forms.
Yes, it's been a while since I got those, but they are, I've picked those up from elsewhere where a similar type of assessment of additional heights provided for.
So to tell me, as from a practical point of view, when it comes to someone assessing the avoidance of large monolithic buildings, I know that's an assessment there, but it reads kind of like a rule as well. How does that get assessed? Who's determining that it is a large monolithic building and therefore to be avoided? And is that a rule, or is that just a criteria?
Well, it's just trying to articulate the notion somewhat as B does around, it's important that the building form, when you are considering extra height, is modulated and architecturally designed well to...
So are those better words as matters of discretion?
Modulation? Well, I think B covers those in terms of roof form, including screen planting and servicing. I take your point that C is probably not so evaluative of that matter.
That's fine. We can work on. Thank you very much.
Mr. McLeod?
I'm pretty much good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Todd.
Thank you.
And Mr. Williams, sorry. I'll see you a little later in the morning.
Yes.
We are scheduled to hear the HCA, you're not from the HCA, sir? Well, I think we are adjourned until the representative of the HCA arrives.